Welcome to Voices and Views. This is your host, Thomas Risberg, here on KGPR Great Falls Public Radio 89.9. And today on Voices and Views, I am privileged to have Sandy Filipowicz, the Executive Director of the YWCA Great Falls. Sandy, thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for letting me.
So I've told our listeners, I think our society, I call it a culture of contempt, and that we oftentimes don't know the people that we are interacting with on policy issues and just that are generally, working together. And I think that that has led to misunderstanding and a level of divisiveness. And so I want to understand my guests and thus to have our community have a better idea about who you are, what drives you, what your values are. So, Sandy, I'd like to start. Tell me a little bit, where were you born? What was your childhood like?
I was actually born here in Great Falls at what was the Deaconess Hospital. Then my parents divorced, and my mother married a man that worked in Alaska. So at the age of 8, I moved to Alaska and was raised in Haines. And it was a wonderful place to grow up. It was really small. I graduated with 26 classmates from high school. And then I went off to Finland to be an exchange student. And my grandfather was Finnish. And the woman that has influenced me the most throughout my whole life, of course, is my mom. She was a single mom for a few years before we moved to Alaska. And she's always been my rock. She's always been my guiding star as far as values go. There are two things that I look back on. When I was not even a teenager yet, I had a t-shirt that said, "A woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle." Now, I don't really agree with that. I love my husband. I think women need men and men need women. But I think that says something about what I... how I thought and the strength of women in my life. I had aunts and my mother and my grandmother that were always the foundation of my formative years. They were really the strongest.
Absolutely. And I love just the concept of you're independent,
right?
That you have individual agency, that you can make changes in your life that have positive effects on yourself and the community.
Right.
So I love that. And then what's number two?
Let's see. Number two is a lot tougher. It involves my mother talking to me about a very painful subject of abortion, where when she was in high school in the 50s, they had back alley abortions. And she told me one time that she would never want another woman to have to go through that. That she is a completely pro-life person, and so am I. But I also think that there are certain circumstances that medically women need the option, and we should always have that option for our own health.
Absolutely. So this gets at these issues, right, that I do think are subject to a lot of confusion and kind of cross-talking. And so these personal stories, I mean, I think we can all imagine a young person scared, right? And hope that there is options and there is support out there,
right,
for them.
And now, this isn't the 50s. This is a new age where Echo's Pregnancy Center is fabulous about working with people. Even Planned Parenthood, I've worked with to be able to help people with health, just basic, yearly exams and using birth control if they knew that they were in a committed relationship where they were going to be having relations. they had something to prevent a pregnancy.
Absolutely. And I do think that brings up a great broader point is I think a lot of us have a tendency, you know, we have rosy hindsight bias just as human beings. That's part of our nature. But there also is this to think about the halcyon days, right, where everything was, perfect and more wholesome. And I do think your point is so much was just unspoken.
Yes, very much.
You know, I had my father's mom was an alcoholic and drank herself, you know, every day, right? Come home and say, Mom was silly. Now, when she would get pulled over, the police officer would drive her back to her home, right? Mm-hmm. If a husband was abusive, it said, you know, please come over. You need to take it easy. And so I love that groups like the YWCA, like Echoes, right? They're making it, number one, people to feel comfortable to come out and then actually getting to the root causes of a lot of these issues.
Exactly. Especially in domestic violence. You know, I have experienced it in my family, have had family members that experienced it. And it's not my place to talk about specifically, but I know it. And that made it so much, it makes it so much easier every day to work with people because I understand that it's not a matter of, okay, I got out, now I'm going to stay out. There's so much psychological trauma involved in it. And if they have children, it's even more difficult because not everything has been bad. The cycle of violence works, you know, in a cycle of goodness and violence and, you know, love and children and other things that we all value. You know, that's not an easy decision. And when the national average is 7 times that they leave and then go back, it's hard for people in our community to understand why once they come to the Mercy Home at the YWCA, why don't they move on and why can't we prove that they stayed away from that abuser?
Yeah. And I that just gets it that we oftentimes want to categorize and place things in neat boxes,
yes,
right? But that
life doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and that you humanize the abuser, right? That they're not just that, right? That they can be that, but a father and a caretaker and a loving husband in many cases. And so I think that does help, and I love that the YWCA takes that approach, is that violence is unacceptable.
Right.
But let's treat this as what's really happening in these relationships, because if not, you're not going to be able to effectively work with your folks, right?
Right, because we realize that counseling and relating to them deeply is the only thing that helps them work through building a healthier relationship with either that person that they left or another person. And I shouldn't even say that person that they left, because the person that does the abuse, the perpetrator, is the person that needs to change. They're the ones that need the most help. And the hardest part at the Y is we don't have good services for abusers in Great Falls. And people have asked us, and we would be happy to help try to make that happen, but we can't do that and serve victims in the same location.
That makes complete sense.
Yes, and that's the only thing that holds us back from really working to make that happen, but we know that that's important that it happen.
Yeah, well, that's a call to our listeners out there in the community.
We need abusers' assistance and counseling.
Absolutely. So I want to, before we get to dive too far into the YWCA and the services, I want to pick up, I mean, moving to Alaska, growing up there, it's just fascinating to me. And I want to give our listeners kind of the full chronology of how you became this wonderful community leader. So you're growing up in Alaska and...
Well, as a senior, I was, this is funny, but it dates me. I was the state president of Future Homemakers of America, the club, the high school club. So that, as hokey as that sounds, I got to travel all over the state of Alaska to Pelican and Hoonah and all the small villages and small high schools that had five kids in them that I could talk about leadership. You know, it just gave me an opportunity to really grow as a person that felt comfortable being a leader. And then I went to Oregon State University after my year in Finland. And they put me in an upperclassman dorm because I was older, a year older. So that was interesting. I didn't know the campus at all when I went there. And that was a wonderful experience for me because I studied home economics, but I got a minor in communications. And that was really my passion. When I left high school, I said, I think I'm going to replace Barbara Walters.
I love it.
So I had a lot of drive. I really did. I felt strong and very confident. But then I fell in love with the man after I helped move my parents. After I graduated from college, I helped my parents move from Haines back to Great Falls, where all of our extended family is, and met my husband. And he had a business here, and that was that. Because we just were meant to be together.
I always love, you know, it doesn't wait for timing and situations.
Totally.
Right?
We both were a little bit older. I was 26 and he was 29 when we met. And he said we couldn't get married for another year, that we had to be engaged for a year. I was so mad. It was like I was ready. Now I think it was the smartest thing that he could have done.
That there is that element of if we're going to be together for the rest of our lives, what's the rush? Right?
Yeah, exactly. No. And then I have two beautiful children. I had a boy and then a girl, and we were fortunate enough and strong enough that I could not work when they were babies until they went to school. It was a little bit lean at our household, which it is, you know, most people cannot afford to not have both people working. And we're very blessed for that to have happened. I'm grateful for it. I always thought that I would be a professional woman. But once I had children, that was my priority. And I just love being a mother.
Absolutely. And I want to touch on that. So, you know, and I got to say, hi, Mom. Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
If you're listening back in St. Louis. But, you know, my mom volunteered a lot at Meals on Wheels. She was heavily involved in the community and she was a substitute teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she was, I guess, what would be called a homemaker. And I can say, one, raising children, she was always there for us. That is my rock and gives you this sense of security that I think, you know, there's nothing like a mother's love, right? I mean, that's said a lot. But I also, something that I think is not touched on as much, my mom was an accountant, right? My mm-hmm. mom was managed everything going on at the house. So that when you say a homemaker, that actually involves a lot of technical experience, right? My mom is an amateur electrician and a plumber,
yeah,
and a fix to anything. She's a person that can do a spreadsheet, books, anything you can think of. And so I think that's really amazing that you were able to spend that time with your kids. And I also think we need to sort of shift our perception of what that means. And
right. I think that's really important. And I think we have to value those people that work part-time and full-time because they need to keep a home over, you know, a roof over their kids' heads or food in their mouths. It's a choice that we have to value. Every choice has to be valued. But I do believe that, and that's why I'm so grateful that it could happen in our family. But I believe that kids are more rounded and can have a different experience when they have parent involvement. And that can happen if someone works full-time or not. But having that true involvement in everything that they do. And for me, I could be the leader of everything that I did. I was the president of the preschool, yeah. You know, a cooperative preschool, parent participation, you know. And I wanted to be at every athletic event, and I wanted to be at the speech events, and you can't trade those memories either, because I think we still didn't have a perfect Mother's Day yesterday with both of my children. Like most families, it's not ever perfect, but I couldn't ask for kinder, better humans than what my husband and I have helped raise.
Yep.
I really couldn't.
And that's really what it is.
Yeah.
About
that. And I remember when they were born thinking, I want them to be kind. You know, there's so much ugliness in this world. I want kind people.
I love that. You know? Yeah. You know, most of all, I want them to follow to be a doctor.
Yeah.
I want him to be kind. I want her to be kind.
Yeah.
And I think that's placing values at the top, which is something that we don't always do, right? We get caught up in the day to day.
And as much as I love my family, I'd be the first to say I've been thrown for a loop over and over again by who that girl and that boy are, because they are so different. And even my husband, I have a home ec degree. And do you think that I could cook dinner every night when I wasn't working? He came home and cooked, because he likes to cook and it makes him relax.
That's a true partnership.
It is. And I felt pretty guilty a couple of times. But then I got over it really fast, because providing a meal every night is really a challenge.
Oh, absolutely. And so I know you then have, you know, you've been executive director of the YWCA for 5+ years.
Well, I went back to work when my kids went to school, when Anna went into first grade, and I only worked part-time as a director of Voices of Hope.
So talk to me about Voices of Hope, because it's very intriguing.
Voices of Hope has been the local crisis line forever. So it was staffed by volunteers, so we would do a lot of training for them to be comfortable taking those calls. And that was the biggest thing. They also had a rape victim advocacy program. And so that became new and passionate, a passion of mine. I became passionate about it as a victim advocate. And it's rolled over into the YWCA's program now, because of that passion and because of other circumstances where they can no longer continue doing that Voices of Hope. But I love Voices of Hope. I think it makes a huge difference to be a 24-hour crisis line when people need it. You know, people aren't in crisis between 9 and 5.
Yeah.
I wish.
Well, is that the truth? Yeah. So I don't want to get too far off, but suicide is a major issue in Montana, and I know generally we've been first in the per capita, the highest suicide rates in the country. I think we were third in this last year, and that's not because our suicides went down. They continued to go up. Other states had to grow more rapidly.
It's us, Nevada, and Alaska.
What did those experiences at Voices of Hope teach you? What can we do better as a community to really get a handle on suicides?
I think it really is a matter of talking about it more, talking about it openly, and realizing what some of the signs are, and teaching the young people and the adults that work with young people that we need to come right out and say, are you having suicidal thoughts? And are you, you know, have you thought about taking your own life? Being, if they say, if they laugh and say no, what's the harm? But usually they're going to say, yeah, because there's very few of us that haven't been very low at some time in our life. So for them to say, yeah, I have thought about it, opens up a conversation where you can say, is there anybody that you can talk to about that? I mean, really, it seems simple, but it's a matter of being confident that you can actually ask someone, have you ever thought about that?
It is, I think we're all hesitant. You know, we don't want to be intrusive.
Right.
And I think that the lesson is love is about asking the tough questions, right?
It is.
And the power of that, of just not, you know, mincing words, right?
Right.
I know that I, you know, you're, oh, that's not my business, right? I don't want to, but I work with a lot of folks that struggle with substance abuse and you know, a lot of mental illness and suicides. That is, you never hide the ball.
No.
If you're straightforward with folks, they will feel valued. And so I think our listeners can...
I think so too.
Get over that hesitancy and ask the tough questions.
I agree. We have, in my family, we have a history of alcoholism and depression. And I think mental health is a huge stigma that we definitely have to get over. My kids went to counselors when they were growing up. It has taught them to take better care of themselves. I think it's very important for everyone to realize that when we need help, to reach out for it.
And I always say, so there's nothing weak about asking for help. You know, you'll have folks that are living, I call this, a lot of folks live lives of quiet desperation.
Yes.
And that ego can be strong, right? Of, I don't need this. But it really is, it takes strength to admit that, you know, I can't be all things to all people. And I'm, you know, not this emotionless,
right,
you know, just I take care of everything.
Right.
That is strength.
Yes.
Being able to raise your hand and say, I don't have everything figured out.
Right.
I need to talk to somebody is strength.
Right. It truly is. And, you know, for me to say both of my kids have been in counseling, they're not crazy. There's nothing crazy about my kids. It's that they struggled at certain times with certain issues. So every kid and every adult has been through some kind of trauma. You know, I've learned about the ACEs program, where we can actually look at different events that are traumatizing to our brain. And my children both had those. One had epilepsy, and the other younger one witnessed the first grand mal seizure, and that caused a lot of frustration and anger. And you know, it was as simple as her saying, I have a grizzly bear in my stomach that growls and gets me in a lot of trouble, because she was throwing fits. You know, he was getting a lot of attention, and all of those things counselors were able to help us with and help them do play therapy. And what we've got going on at the Y right now with therapists is making a huge difference. They are working on what they call EMDR. And it's a wonderful way of doing therapy that helps with PTSD in any trauma victim. It was originated with soldiers and people in the military that had received severe trauma, and you know, of all types, but it really helps with people that have been victims of violent crimes and any other trauma also. And relationship trauma.
That's a great transition into the YWCA and your work there. I do background research, and wow, you guys have a robust array of programs. It's just amazing. And so I want to first start out with, you know, the YWCA. So the mission is empowering women, eliminating racism. So describe each component of that.
You know, the journey that the YWCA Great Falls has taken to eliminate racism has been a really slow, deliberate one in the last 4 years. We realized that, you know, our country has more diverse people than we do in our Great Falls community, especially in the larger cities. So as a part of a national organization, they've been doing the work in Washington, D.C. and Cleveland and L.A. And in Great Falls, they've just not really known where to start with it, is my feeling. But we held the first Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at the Y. So we're good at celebrations. We did that in the 70s. Yeah. So it's not that it wasn't on our radar. We just didn't know how to actively reduce it, make a difference other than jumping on something that was already going on. And a few years ago, we took it upon ourselves to be trained, for the board and staff to be trained about white fragility and systematic racism and some of the terminology that's going on right now with racism. And so that was the first step. The second step, we started some book clubs. And that brought in some really interesting people that some of them we brought onto the board, because we've always known that we needed diversity, ethnic diversity on the board, as well as in the staff, because that's who we serve in the community, both in the Mercy Home and in our programs. And so we need to reflect that diversity that we actually serve. So we had that going for us. And then this past year, we had a racial justice committee do some fabulous work with setting up a website and something within the YWCA website that helped people, Black people, Indigenous people, and people of color, all of them, help them get into leadership positions in our community, on boards, and with the city and with the county, so that they can actually have some assistance in leading them to those positions, so that our community is actually represented by the diversity that's within the community.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's huge.
This is, you know, you hear a lot, it's this lived experience, mm-hmm. that if you're going, this is just any human, right? If you're going to connect with people, and especially a population, I work with a lot of people with substance abuse issues. They've been involved in a lot of systems. They're oftentimes cynical, that it does. It just gives you that kind of immediate credibility, right? That feeling of commonality that makes it easier to address difficult issues. So I love the work you're doing. And then the empowering women.
Okay. Now that's exciting, because that's been done for many years. We had a technology room, and we've had Taekwondo classes, and we continue at this time. We have self-defense classes. We have a Power of Sisterhood program, which started with mentors from the community being trained and working with girls in middle school. And it's morphed into a program where our counselors go into the middle schools and work with a group during club time to talk about what they want to talk about and have some other programming where we empower them. You know, talk about self-esteem, talk about what a healthy relationship is. Because now middle schoolers are saying that they've all been in relationships in our groups. So, I mean, we're trying to meet them where they're at. And it's really a beautiful group of girls that we try to follow through high school. And we invite them to Salute to Women, where they can dress up and have their hair done and experience something really elegant and different.
And let's talk a little bit about Salute to Women. So one thing as background that I don't know that most Americans, most listeners are aware of is the transformation on major metrics of women in society over the last 50 years. So when you look at things like labor force participation, as men have declined, right? If you go back to 1950, you're looking at 96, 97% of adult males 18 to 55 are either looking for work or in a job.
Right.
That's fallen precipitously into the 60s. Now, women have fully filled that gap. I mean,
yes.
Where the United States would sit without involvement of women in the workforce, I think is something that's really not appreciated. You see this reflected also in college, right?
Right.
From what you would have seen certainly 100 years ago, a heavily male-dominated. Oh. There are more female graduates from undergrad programs than males.
Right.
And I really think we as a society are shifting and need to shift and to see women as leaders,
mm-hmm.
right? And Salute to Women, I know, really is honoring these folks. So tell us
exactly.
a little bit about it.
That's exactly how we determine who is honored. We have people nominate outstanding women in the community, and then we have a completely different group, not affiliated with the Y, judge them, all of the entries, and they are judged on empowering women and eliminating or working on eliminating racism. And so it totally is in line with our mission, but it really, that empowering women part of it means that they are strong women themselves in order to empower other women. And so the women that we were able to honor came out in February and the very beginning of March a year ago. And it's taken us this long through the pandemic to figure out how to honor them in the right way. And we're doing that right now. And it's going to be a hybrid event. It's going to be, a lot of people have heard of Salute to Women and they love the idea, but they haven't been to the event. It's usually an event that has about 200 people. And it's usually the people that are closest to the honorees that attend. So there's still a lot of people in the community that think that it's an elusive, wonderful event. It's wonderful, but it's not elusive. And we'll take that to everyone that wants to see what it's all about this year.
So I'd love to hear just a couple of the honorees that will be being honored.
Well, we have a fairly new this is our third year of our Sheila Rice Lifetime Achievement Award. And, you know, she is such a fabulous part of our community. Well, the person that won that award this year is Carol Juno. Carol Juno was the woman that was able to go to the legislature and the state Office of Public Instruction and get Indian education in the curriculum for every school-age children, for all school-age children. So that is a huge, huge part of who Montana is. And to be able to take that into the schools and correct people's knowledge of what actually their history is and know what role they have played in all of where we're living in Montana. So I just think that's huge. And for her to still be a part of everything that we do, she's out for the last 5 years. I've known her as a supporter of the Y, and for someone to nominate her and tell me everything that she has done has just really humbled me, and I'm so excited to be able to honor her.
Absolutely. So a huge shout out to Carol Juneau.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do say we stand on the shoulders of giants.
We do.
And I do think it keeps us in keeps things in perspective, right?
It really does.
That we have this grand legacy, right, of folks that made those, stepped out, stepped up, and that's our kind of inheritance, right?
It is.
And it's a beautiful thing to see and to celebrate. You know, when I hear Salute to Women, you know, I think, I hope all of our, you know, school children are able to see that. You know,
yes.
Both boys and girls, right?
Exactly. I mean, exactly. And that's the beauty of it being, you know, televised or videoed.
Yeah, Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom.
I always say...
Like I said, hybrid. It'll be... the way that I see it happening is us having a small group to do the awards and do it up fun and nice the way they deserve, and then put it all together so that it can be put out to the community.
That Zoom, which I'm sure many of our listeners, it can be very difficult when you're trying to do a lot of interaction.
Yes.
But a presentation has that real benefit that's something that, for practical reasons, would probably be generally limited to Great Falls and the surrounding areas,
yeah,
can, you know, be seen, you know, by folks all over the state. And it really enriches us and strengthens us as a community, is that folks know what's going on in Great Falls, and us in Great Falls increasingly have access to the wonderful things going on in Billings and Missoula,
exactly,
and throughout the state. So,
yeah,
kudos. I love the hybrid approach.
Good.
And I want to now talk a little bit about some of your guys' programs, the core programs, and the one that really touches my heart and just as important work is that Mercy Home Shelter. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Yeah, it was actually put together in the 70s when there was no help for women that were in a domestic violence situation at the time. We were the first shelter in Montana and one of the first in the nation. And it was put together by a bunch of church women, you know, women of faith, different churches, that said, we need to provide a safe space for these women and children when they're being abused. And so that they had that program as a community group from 70 until 1990. And in 1990, they asked the YWCA to take it over. And so that's how long we've had it. And we have the most secure shelter in the state. We have definitely the strongest program for counseling. Missoula and Billings have YWCAs that have wonderful buildings and wonderful programs, but I would put ours up against them any day in a competition of effectiveness and empowerment, because that's the philosophy we use. We do not tell them, someone coming from an abusive situation has been told how to do something and when to do it, very specifically controlled. That's a part of the domestic violence scenario. And so we need to be the opposite of that. We need to be caring. We need to be helping them. For those first few days, I've noticed and was shocked when I first started at the YWCA how, you know, it can be a day or two of exhaustion and sleeping or crying or just realizing that they're in a safe place can make everything change in their whole body. So those first few days, we help them with the children, and we feed them, and we, you know, pretty much just do whatever they meet their needs, however they need to be met. And then after that, we do what we generally call case management, but we do that on an individual basis. So every person that we do case management with is seen as an individual. Their individual truth is what we respect. And they set their own goals. They set their own timelines. So we have a 90-day program. When I started, it was a 60-day program, but it's just turned into that's what most of them are needing, is around 90 days to become self-sufficient and confident and ready to go out and into the community.
I love that you support, it's this individual agency as a concept that I bring up a lot, is that there is this tendency, you know, that it's a thin line, right? But you don't want the program that's helping them to be paternalistic, right?
Right.
You'll run into that irony,
right?
Is that, you know, you're sort of telling folks what to do, and it's in theory to empower them, but you've got to actually, you know, find out what they want, not what the program is, and to give them that chance to, you know, show that, hey, I can do this. And so I love that focus on this is your plan. These are your goals. We're
right
here to assist you, but you've got the power. You've got the agency that can make this happen.
Exactly.
And so some quick things. So it's a 90-day program. How many beds are available?
It can vary because we can move beds in and out of rooms. But the maximum that we can have is 26. During COVID, we have had a whole nother room created that was originally supposed to be a quarantine room that we can do overflow in now. And we do overflow into a motel, because every time someone comes to us, we do what we call a lethality assessment. And that means that we find out what their danger level is. And, you know, if they absolutely, they've already left someone, which is the most dangerous time for the family, is when they leave, we can't send them to the rescue mission, or we always make sure that they have a safe place to go to. And if there is no other safe place, we'll make sure that we take care of them. Because that's just what we are, is domestic violence advocates.
That's,
you know,
that's beautiful. And I do just a little bit to give our listeners. So it's a 90-day program. And what are some of the interventions that are going on during that 90 days?
We don't call any of it intervention, but we are offering them free counseling. We're doing play therapy with the kids in the shelter, not as a scheduled therapy session. We have a therapist going in and just doing it in the living room, because there's a lot of hesitation when you have been controlled for a long time. You don't have a lot of trust, and sometimes it takes 90 days, and that's when they start trusting us. Well, we haven't had time to help them with everything that they might have asked for if they had trusted us earlier. You know, that's a real struggle that we have. But we'll offer them, we work with a lot of other agencies. We work with Alliance for Youth. We work with Opportunities Incorporated. We just have great partners in the community so that all of their needs are met.
Yeah, absolutely. There is that, you know, it takes a village kind mm-hmm. of mindset that I love. You know, I'm from St. Louis. I've only lived out here for about 4 years. And the way folks truly work together here, I've seen, you know, you get a lot of kind of turf
yeah.
stuff, and you just don't see that here. And it really is refreshing, and it works. That's the best part.
Well, from my perspective, My load is heavy. I'd love to share my load. And that's exactly what the other agencies do.
Absolutely. Now, I want to talk about, because I think this is important for folks to know, is this advocacy and especially the legal aspects of what you guys do. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
We rely heavily on our partners at Legal Aid, and they can help us and help the participants that are in the Mercy Home with, we help with orders of protection and the very simple legal paperwork. But if they want to file charges, other charges against the person that abused them or was violent, then we work with a victim witness quite a bit too. So we reach out to the other professionals to be able to take it into serious legal proceedings. But we're always available to go with them to any of those appointments or court hearings.
Boy, is that important. I mean, you talk about fear going in there, and especially, you know, if your abuser's there. I mean, that is a traumatic experience in and of itself.
It really is.
Really excited you guys do that. Another thing, I want folks to know this. So you guys have incredible, you know, licensed clinical professional counselors offering a range of groups. So, you know, I know Kim Bodily a little bit, and just to kind of give our listeners an understanding, you know, of what are the counselors doing?
You know, we have, Veronda Biggert has been a counselor for the last 4 years. She's been licensed. She started out as an advocate in the Mercy Home shelter and then was earning her degree as she worked as an advocate. So she's been with the Y for a long time and has a true understanding of the victimization and how she can help them best. And Kim came to us as an intern from University of Providence and is now a licensed counselor. And so we can offer the hours they're getting provisional licenses now, and we can offer them the time there. So that's a beautiful partnership that we have with the university to be able to give them the experience and have them help the victims at the same time. But that creates a quite high turnover. Veronda and Kim are steady. I think they're committed. They're passionate about our mission. They are mentors to the other interns, and they are both fully qualified to offer EMDR therapy, which is a really, really promising practice that helps with PTSD.
Absolutely. I have tons of friends that have struggled with trauma, and they say that EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, is a game changer, that they've tried everything.
Yes.
So make sure our listeners know that that's available, because I know it also takes above and beyond your normal kind of clinical hours in getting it. It's a specialty.
It is.
But it's wonderful that you guys offer that, because I hear it's a game changer.
It really is. One of the most beautiful things about the EMDR is that you don't have to go deeply into verbalizing what your trauma is. It's more of an internal, you know, you describe what level of stress you're at and anxiety. So that really helps people that are getting the therapy to realize that we're doing it as gently as possible, but really making a difference and helping you make a difference for yourself, which is really powerful.
I was going to say, it's all I love. It's that, you know, empowerment, empowerment, empowerment.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing to see.
It is.
So I want to shift over, you know, there's a lot of needs, right? That I say, you're one of these, you give free services to people with no money, right? It's
right.
A difficult model.
It
so
is.
So tell us how people that want to support YWCA can get involved.
You know, our website at ywcagreatfalls.org is the best place to see what our needs are. And we have so many different opportunities for people to do physical volunteering as well as donating funds. Because we're in an older building, we've always got maintenance, we've got yard work, we've got window cleaning, but just funding. We just did Give Great Falls program last week, and that was a wonderful way to be able to show the community what we have going and how they can support us.
Absolutely. And I know you have coming up is a shoe drive. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, this is so exciting. It's Funds to Orgs, and it's a national organization in Florida that has nonprofits gather 25,000 pairs of shoes, which fills a semi-trailer. It's a lot of shoes, and we're asking people to bring in new or gently used shoes that are in good condition, donate them to us, and we bag them up and store them in a semi, and they will send a truck out from Florida to pick these shoes up. I call it a triple win program because it's keeping these shoes out of a landfill, which in the United States, we really throw away a lot of good shoes. They're still have a lot of life in them. So that's the first win. The second win is that we're sending these shoes to developing countries like Guatemala and Haiti that do most of their shopping out in little shops, you know, in the open. And they don't have a steady influx of new things. So people go to these stands and purchase them there. So we're creating micro businesses for these women to support their families. So that's a huge empowerment. And then the third is we'll receive $10,000 from Funds to Orgs just for getting all these shoes together, which has been a lot of work because we have to bag it and then take it to storage. But we have lots of partners. The Rescue Mission Thrift Store has been really supportive of us. And we've had different churches that have done shoe drives. We've had the Cascade School has done a shoe drive. I just don't want to lose any momentum because we still need more. And I just want to put that call out to everyone. We can take everything from slippers to flip-flops to boots.
I love it. Environment, entrepreneurial spirit, encouraging that. And then, you know,
benefiting
getting resources for the why. So I always want to, you know, you've been involved in so many things in the Great Falls community. And I like to ask guests, you know, is there one thing that you think we could do better as a community, a change that you would like to see?
I'm a vision person. I have a whole list.
We've got a list. We can do a list.
You know, one of my dreams, and this is connected to the why, is that we have an international food fair. I mean, honestly, why aren't we celebrating ethnic dishes? I personally think it would be wonderful. And it would just draw everyone together. And so that would be my number one.
I love it.
Yeah.
An international food fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so what about what makes Great Falls special?
I'm a water person. I grew up, you know, in Alaska on the coast. So it was the ocean there, and I commercial fished in the ocean up there. So water is really important to me, and we have a beautiful river. And I think we're moving towards getting those businesses set up along the river, but we need to utilize that more. We need to somehow bring our events together again. I remember because I've been here for over 30 years now again, and I loved the Junior League calendar that had all of our different community events on one calendar. because I know the city tries to do that, and that, you know, we all try to do that as nonprofits, and it's just not quite cohesive yet. I think that would help a lot.
I love that idea. Oh, the community calendar is, you know, it's one of those things in our kind of fragmented society that no place, you know, everything's out there, but it might be in 10 different places.
Right.
So it'd be nice to see that. So we're coming to the end of the hour, and I just want to thank you so much for coming here today, and just make sure that our listeners know if they want to reach out to the Y. I know the website is a great resource. Could you just give folks that address, and then any other ways that they can contact you?
Oh, yes. The website is ywcagreatfallsspelledout.org. And we're located at 220 2nd Street North, right next to Smoked, who is also very good to us. And you can come down and visit us, because we still have a Wise Buys thrift store in our basement that is really supported by the community and has the lowest thrift store prices in town. Definitely drop in for that. But you can call us also at 452-1315.
There you have it, folks. So go pick up some incredible smoked barbecue, and then come on, do some shopping at the Y Thrift Store. And then, of course, you know, contact them and get involved and support YWCA and the incredible work they're doing. So thank you again, Sandy, so much for coming on and everything you do in our community.
Thank you.